Radio station.
Then make it happen.
Then we can think of Raised in Wisco with Joel and Danielle. But we went into the break and we're talking about a myriad of things, from dogs to, you know, hunting dogs, raising dogs. And Mike Keller, our guest today, who does a lot of old squaw hunting out on Lake Michigan in layout boats and raises dogs and breeds dogs and sells dogs and does some training of dogs. And I've been in the field with his dog, which is an absolutely incredible experience. But what advice do you give to people, Mike, who think, geez, I'd like to maybe have a hunting dog, but it's a lot more work than it's worth? Is that true? Is that not true? Is it you get out what you put in kind of thing?
It's a you get out what you put in kind of thing. Honestly, if you start early, and I mean like the day you get your puppy, 8 weeks, do some research on some things. You can teach a puppy how to do pretty much anything with food and a clicker. And if you can get them sitting and coming to a whistle and responding to a few basic commands and retrieving back to you by the time they're 4 months, all you need to do is make it bigger. And that literally takes, like, I spend with my puppies 10 minutes a day, 3 days a week.
Okay.
4 days a week.
That's not a lot.
And you can overtrain a puppy. You don't want to burn them out. They don't process as fast as people. So it takes them 24 to 48 hours to get a lesson that you're teaching them, for one. And for two, if it's the same thing all the time, their little brains are so fast that they're like, okay, what are we doing next? What are we doing next? What are we doing next? And you're just going to frustrate yourself, and then you're going to make it bad for the dog.
All right.
And so, like, I literally, like, hit them for 10 minutes, little bit of sit, little bit of here, little bit of retrieving. I keep those separate until they get bigger. Like, we'll retrieve for fun. That'll be what we do today.
I have a tomorrow dog that's gun shy, that became gun shy after she was a good retriever. Is that fixable?
Oh. If you can learn to associate the gun with the retrieve, you can probably fix it, but it is a very, very difficult thing to fix.
Why did that happen?
My guess is the gunshot did not happen in conjunction with something cool the first time that you introduction to gunshot is a big deal with a hunting dog. If you just walk out and bang, shoot next to your dog, you're going to freak them out. It's like a firework.
Mm-hmm.
There's a ton of hunting dogs. It's like that joke that you see at 4th of July. My hunting dog was looking for ducks all over my living room.
I've never heard that.
Because of the fireworks.
I have never heard that. Well, I always hear with fireworks, it's like a different percussion.
It's totally different, and that's why your hunting dog can be scared of fireworks.
My dog's scared of fireworks.
Right, but goes hunting, and it's like, oh my God, this is awesome.
Oh, so
because that noise is associated with getting a retrieve. Where just bang is associated with just bang, and it's loud and scary.
Even the word bang just got all the dogs in the studio about retrieving something.
Let's do it.
And so when you introduce a dog to gunfire, you should do it at a distance, with birds or with retrieving. Throw bumpers, have a friend 40 or 50 yards away, shoot when the bumper is thrown, and then the dog gets a retrieve. And then as the dog's more comfortable, you get closer and closer and closer and closer and closer, and before you know it, you're shooting with 10 guys over your dog. But the other thing that happens, a lot of guys, they'll go out and train their dog alone all summer long. Not shoot over their dog, do bumper retrieves, and not introduce their dog to birds. And then at 9 months, think, oh, it's opening day. Let's go hunting. And go out on opening day of early goose season with their young dog. 10 dudes blaze full 3 shots apiece right into the first flock. And that dog's traumatized at that moment, because it has never associated that shooting with retrieving or with hunting or with the birds. And guys were like, what happened? Well, the first time you take a dog hunting, you should do it with one or two guys. You should probably not have a gun. And you should pay attention to what the dog's doing and make sure that you've already associated a lot of the things that are going to happen today with the dog and the gun and the blinds and stuff. So it's a lot of preparation. I mean, you think about taking a 6-year-old out to the field that has high level ADD that barely speaks English, and you go hunting like we do. We hunt. I mean, it's not like a couple of dudes shooting a couple of birds. When we go out, we plan on having everybody get their limit.
You know, because the actual hunting is the scouting you put in and the work.
Right, exactly.
And the day that you're showing up is the actual harvesting.
Like you said earlier, we're all busy. Right. We have other things to do. To lay in a field and not shoot birds while you're thinking about work and your kids or your wife or your dogs or your girlfriend or your boyfriend or your job, that's aggravating. It's like, what else could I be doing right now?
Yeah.
So you're driving around every morning before work so that when you do get a Thursday that you have an extra hour and a half, you can go out, blaze your birds, and be done.
Yeah, you're not just wasting your time when you actually go hit the field. Yep, that's not to say that you can scout as hard as you want, and there are going to be times you sit out there and nothing happens.
Stupid.
And that is when you get to laugh with your friends. And, you know, Danielle, we talked a lot last week about women in hunting.
Yes.
And you're a quintessential real hunter. I mean, you are out there. You're putting in the work to scout and get permissions, and you have a dog.
I do.
And did you work on the training of that dog with Mike?
I'm glad we wrapped around to this because I wanted to say something. So with our first dog, Ranger, I did not train him properly, and I completely regret it because with Ranger, he was a tad bit gun shy. He was not like aggressive with it, but he was more or less like, oh, okay, this is a loud noise. I should be doing something, but I don't know what I should be doing. And with him, he wasn't really good with retrieving. But it was my first dog, so I didn't know what to do. So then I contacted this fine gentleman over here, Mike Keller. I'm like, okay, what do we need to do?
Okay, wait a minute. You just said this fine gentleman, Mike.
Right. Let's oversell it a little.
Well, that's a little oversell.
The reason why he's a fine fella. There's three dogs
in
here.
I know John Whitmore Woody is listening right now, so he just rolled his eyes in the truck. But go ahead with your story.
He brought me three dogs. I'm happy. But with Bandit, the dog that we have now, we brought him to the gun club when he was just a puppy. We brought him to the gun club and we stayed down the driveway just so we can the gunshots were audible. And we were doing the retrieves. We're having him heel, then toss.
They were kind of like
fun stuff.
Pops in the distance.
They weren't like loud. You could hear them.
Fun stuff.
Yeah, we just tossed it and just hung out. And then we got about 50 yards closer. We kept getting closer and closer and closer and closer until we're pretty much, I asked, hey, is it okay if we stand over here and then my dog will just train?
So how did you get a hold of Mike to be able to do this? Was it just because we knew him through hunting?
She has my personal number.
Bill does.
Fiance has your personal number.
Don't put too much pressure on the bill.
It was actually the retrieve with Peaches. I was like, okay, this guy knows what he's doing. I didn't really know him then. But with Peaches, she did a retrieve with only hand signals. Blew my mind. He threw his arm right, she went right, or she went left, but he went right and she went left. And it was mind-blowing.
She went the direction I pointed.
Yes. She went, okay.
She was facing me.
Danielle, do you need to put your fingers up and say she went left?
You went right. I
pointed right and she was facing me, so she went to her left.
Anatomical direction.
Yep. So do we need to bring in like stage cues, like stage left, stage right? The dog went where Mike pointed.
Starboard, yes.
But that's what we did. We just took him to there's a dog in my lap and I'm distracted.
I can see that.
Here, now. Okay. We took Bandit to the gun club and we just got closer and closer. And now every time he hears a gunshot,
he thinks he's getting a retreat.
He is shaking. Which is annoying. I don't know how to stop this, but he is whining like a cat. His teeth start chattering. He's like, oh, it's time. Let's do this. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go. Which is fantastic. He is wonderful with the cues of Mike Keller here. He told us what to do. And now Bandit, every time we even bring the bumper out, he's just like, let's do it.
Bandit is a very high drive dog. He loves to do his job so much.
He's like
that
his mama.
He lets everybody know.
Oh, yeah.
Well, let me ask you a question about that, Mike, because this is in. You know, we do talk about some tough stuff on this show because there is a contingent of the population, even here in Wisconsin with such a hunting heritage, that thinks hunting is bad and using a dog to hunt is bad and it's bad for the dog, when the reality of it is this is what the dogs live for. They don't just like to do it or are it's don't feel DNA. Forced to do it. This is what they live yeah. to do. They are yeah. called retrievers. They're called Labrador retrievers for a reason, because it is literally built into their genes.
It is. It's in their DNA. And it goes back to the beginning of when they were bred. Their Labrador retriever was actually bred to jump off a boat, catch the fish that fell out of the net, and bring them back to the boat.
Fish.
Yeah. So
those doggy kisses had a stink.
Duck hunters were like, hey, my God, I get to see this. This is amazing. I don't have to go get my own ducks anymore. And they started using them and getting them all over. And then the lab that we have now that was developed in the UK was developed to find game and to be calm. And like Danielle, her dog is a little more hyper. That's a genetic thing too. Dogs that are
but when it's shaking, when its teeth are chattering, it's because it's excited
it's because
and happy.
It is so wanting to do this because in my genetic DNA, that's all that I can think of. Right. And I mean, it's literally like fulfilling its whole purpose.
And I think sometimes, and what something that's kind of funny to me is that very often, like, I mean, this show is filled with meat eaters, people who hunt. You know, the ethical way to hunt is definitely to eat what you kill, and it's part of a provider lifestyle, and there is no better fare, in my opinion, in life than taking something from the field, preparing it in really creative ways, and that's something I'm good at and really get into. Mm-hmm. But when someone says, oh gosh, you know, oh, hunting is evil because you're killing animals and eating meat, and then they have a dog who's a pet and they don't realize, I think to myself, I want to ask them, well, what do you feed your dog? Dogs are carnivores.
They feed dog food that's been dried out. And
meat. But it's meat. Right. And so I think even in its
I think the biggest thing with dogs is the preservance of game.
No question.
You know, like they make it so that we don't waste. I can't right. find a basically miniature football-sized brown item in a brown field myself. But I can send my dog out, and if I get it downwind within 50 yards, it's finding that, and it's bringing it back to me. And now what I killed is making it to my table instead of being wasted.
No question about it.
And I wouldn't, personally, I would never hunt waterfowl without a dog mm-hmm. unless I'm open water hunting like I do out on Lake Michigan, because you can see them and they can't, the dog's not doing any good
right.
there.
Right. I mean, and look, I field hunt quite a bit, field hunt geese without a dog, but that's a whole different
They're
story.
They're gigantic.
We don't lose any of those either. to the best of our ability, of course, because you're trying to be ethical as much as you I'm can. But the point I was going child. To make is that dogs genetically and historically and even back to their ancestors hundreds of thousands of years ago, they were hunters and retrievers for themselves and for their group of dogs they lived with and their dog families, and they provided that meal for them.
Well, they've done that for humans for thousands of years. Yes. I mean, dogs have been found buried with their humans
absolutely.
For thousands
back to
of
Egyptian
years.
Egyptian tombs.
And they gathered and hunted with their human beings.
All right, we got one more segment. That's how fast this has gone. You're listening to Raised in Wisco with Joel Clayfish and Danielle Fairman. We'll be right back. The Ring of Fire.
Hi there, I'm Kirk Bankstad, and I own the Monaco Brewing Company, and I also have a super PAC. We make good trouble in the north woods of Wisconsin. You can support our efforts at themonacobrewingcompany.com and buy our woke gear, like t-shirts, hoodies, and trucker hats. Enter the code RADIO and get 10% off on your next purchase. A portion of all sales support the Monaco Brewing Company super PAC, which is dark money meant for good. That's themonacobrewingcompany.com.
Hey, everybody, I'm Joel Clayfish, and I've got a new show on WAUK 540 AM 101 FM, The Shaw. It's called Raised in the Shaw with Joel Clayfish. I was born and raised in Waukesha, and you wouldn't believe what a springboard that is for a crazy, exciting life. We'll talk provider lifestyle, hunting, fishing, and, of course, cooking from field to table, because food's my favorite dish. We'll have local and national celebrity guests. Join us at 7 Thursdays for Raised in the Shaw. See you then.